So everyone is going to have 3 minutes, and we'll see if we can. So the first speaker is. They check his.
Do you want to stand up here?
Yeah. Could you just give him the? That's even better.
Oh, 3 minutes. I'll be way under 3 minutes. So this poster is a very simple idea. We're just trying to test the Martini force field, but in a region where it's just not the usual one, we're doing simulations in vacuo. The reason is we're going to want to study large, the association of large protein complexes in the gas phase that also have charges, and we want to put a charge hopping model on it. So we did a first test to see how well this did. We had already done some all-atom simulations comparing results, mostly structural, some force, and the poster basically is going to give details of that. The result, there it is. The bottom line is semi-quantitative agreement. If you want to know more than that, you can come to the poster. Thank you.
Thank you. Carmichael is next.
So, hi, I'm Scott Carmichael. I work with Scott Schell, and presenting on this poster algorithm that we've developed where you use an all-atom trajectory to generate arbitrary geometry coarse grain model. So it reads in the topology file and gives you a visual representation. You assign what atoms are going to be coarse grained and what sites, and then run relative entropy minimization on it, and it spits out a model. So this poster just shows some analysis of those models. I think there's another slide.
Oh, there's another slide, yes.
So, yeah, that's there's a basically a G of R overlap.
Okay. Thank you. Next up is Shengfeng Cheng.
So this is the work I did at Sandia with Mark Stevens and Ankush Agarwal from UCLA. So this is about a simulation about a self-assembly of wedge-shaped building blocks into tubular structures. So this is obviously a very crude representation of any realistic building blocks. So the backbone of our wedge is composed of 27 particles. Initially, they're in a cube geometry, and then they're deformed into a wedge. And we put 8 attractive sides on the left, right, and the bottom and top sides of the wedge. And then lateral bounding. So attractions only exist between those color sides in the same color. The lateral bounding is going to drive wedges into rings, and then vertical bounding is going to drive wedges into filaments or rings, stack rings into tubular structures. So the attractive interaction is given by soft potential. So A is effectively a interaction strength, the bounding strength. So we study a structure diagram as a function of the lateral and the vertical bounding strengths. So the main message is that tubes are only formed in a very narrow range in the parameter space, particularly the region circled by the ellipse there. The message is that you have to keep interactions as weak as possible to just allow assembly to occur. And then in that case, you can observe very nice tubes to form. And the second message is that even though we design our wedges for non-helical tubes, we often observe helical tubes formed out of those wedges.
Great. Next.
Hi, my name is Aviel Chemovic, and my poster is right there. It's about the hydrophobic interaction. And the main focus of my work is to try and settle a discrepancy between experiments and computers. So if you look at the left graph, when you measure the hydrophobic interaction, you get a monotonic, very strong force. When you measure it with computers, you generally get an oscillatory force that's relatively weak. So how do you explain it? Could you go to the next? Okay, yeah. So we try and we attempt to solve this problem via the spherical symmetric water, which you've all heard about already. We optimize it by the relative entropy. Just the methodology that Scott Schell talked about yesterday. And one of the things that my poster shows is that actually this water model does effectively manifest partial tetrahedrality. And by using this model, we actually get the graph on the left over there with where you can see all the curves collapsing. So we actually get a transition from a oscillatory weak force to the monotonic strong force. And if we plot the contact energy over there on the right figure, for those of you who are familiar with the Lum-Chan-Weeks theory, we get a very reminiscent curve to that. We also get an equivalent crossover in the oscillatory with exponential vanishing. That's the bottom panel. And you can see more in the, my poster.
Next.
Hello, everyone. My name is Alexander Mirzoev. Basically, I'm here to advertise our software, which just got released recently. And it's doing a structure-based coarse graining. I don't think we need actually an introduction here about what it is. So the code is, I guess we start with the reference system, then do some coarse grain atom beading, bit mapping, and add some interactions in the system. And then the key question is how to get the effective potentials, which will basically keep the same structure that we have from the reference system. And I guess there are a few well-known methods to do that. Basically, it's iterative Boltzmann inversion or a inverse Monte Carlo. And we hopefully reproduce both of them in our package. Please, next slide. And basically, you can see the way how it is organized. We start with a higher resolution system and ends with a lower resolution system. And it's just a general goal decided. And the part which actually we have implemented, it's the part in between them, or between a high resolution and a low resolution, which is kind of multi-stage process. So first we have our high resolution, we do mapping, then we calculate reference distribution functions, and then we do the most important part, we iteratively generate potentials, which will reproduce the reference functions. Well, this is pretty similar to what Christoph did, and I'm pretty happy that he hasn't compared his package to ours, because his work is, well, not only his, but Victor's as well, is way more impressive, but, well, two are often better than one, and since we have our sampling engine is a Metropolis Monte Carlo, so finally we can have inverse Monte Carlo with actually a Monte Carlo. What else I can say? The main idea is please visit us at the website mentioned there. Download and try the code. If you don't feel it's ready enough, just subscribe for the newsletter so you will see all updates. But I don't think, I promise you will not be spammed too often. And if you feel that the code is quite all right, so and you would like to join us, please join us, and you have a pretty significant chance to be in the first 10th of our committers. I guess that's it.
Thank you.
Here. Okay.
So, hello, my name is John Carl, and I'm going to tell you briefly about the work that I've been doing with Frank Brown and Paul Asperger. So the goal here is to model the fluctuating lipid bilayer membrane with protein inclusions. And we do this at the continuum level for the membrane with discrete protein locations within the membrane. The idea is very simple. We start out with the Helfrich sheet, and we locally modify it around the protein locations. So we just switch out the preferred curvature and the stiffness in a region around the proteins. And we do this using the kernel function given up on the right-hand side of the poster. And then we use this for a few applications. One is we look at the effective homogeneous elastic stiffness of a membrane, so throwing in more flat proteins in the membrane, seeing how that affects the stiffness. And we've also looked at how diffusivity of proteins that induce local curvature is affected by how strong the curvature induction is. And during that work, we found that the kernel that we use to couple the membrane to the proteins needs to be picked carefully so that we won't suffer numerical effects that will cause the proteins to favor lattice precisions. And on the lower right, we can see the energy barriers that were in our previous work. And we have implemented a method that reduces those errors without adding too much computational cost, which we call phase factor averaging. Thank you for your attention, and I would be more than happy to talk to you if you have any questions afterwards. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. And so now we're going to switch to the PowerPoints. 1 minute.
Oops. Okay. So good afternoon, I'm Jörg Butler, and my poster will change gears a little bit and is concerned with interface problems in materials physics, where diffusional processes occur on long time scales but still require knowledge about atomistic level features. Now, these are problems that are usually beyond the capabilities of traditional molecular dynamics. One can use things like phase field models on the continuum scale, but those require parameterization by hand. So we have used an approach which is sometimes referred to as the phase field crystal method. And this is basically a field theory where one considers free energy functionals that are minimized by periodic density fields that you can think of as representing soft atoms. These fields can then be evolved either dissipatively or propagatively, and the advantage of that approach is that density fluctuations equilibrate much more rapidly than in particle-based systems. In particular, there are no vacancies in such a crystal. However, the system still knows about deviations from the ground state and therefore can describe defects such as dislocations and grain boundaries, and those emerge naturally and self-consistently with this method. So mark the second slide, please. So the poster will try to convince you that this method, although it's quite simple, can capture a broad range of phenomena in materials physics, at least semi-quantitatively. And we have three examples that are illustrated in particular. First one is a solid-solid transformation where we quench into the ordered phase and we observe nucleation and coarsening of dissimilar phases. The second one is solidification in a binary system where we observe lamellar growth, again between dissimilar materials. And the last one, which I think is particularly cute, is the growth, first the nucleation growth of a quasicrystal, and then the absorption of a monolayer film on top of that quasicrystal for different interaction strengths. So I hope you'll have a few minutes to talk to me in the back. Thank you.
And my name is Lars Pastewka, and this is work that was done with Tristan Sharp and Mark Robbins. So what you can do easily on a computer these days is millions of atoms, right? And you can, if you want, you can go to billions of atoms. And I'm trying to convince you that we can do an infinite number of atoms. Of course, that's cheating. We can only do that for a crystal. So what we do is we set up a crystal, we chop it in half, and then we replace the bottom of the crystal by a harmonic approximation of that same crystal. And then what you can do is you can renormalize all the crystalline layers between sort of the point where you decide to treat the crystal harmonically into the boundary layer without losing any information about the atomic structure. So essentially this is a boundary element method that keeps the atomic structure of the crystal intact. And then we did tests of that using a spherical indenta and other contact mechanical problems. And if you want to know more about that, well, talk to me and come to my poster. Thank you.
Okay. Davidson, I think, is next. Who violates the three-slide rule, so be fast.
Okay. yeah, my name is Jacob Davidson. No, oops.
Nope. Not that fast.
I'm in engineering, and we're looking at constructing a multi-scale model of large deformation rubber elasticity, viscoelasticity, that would then be suitable for finite element use. So looking at using the molecular dynamic simulations to form this model. And in this work, we looked at applying network theory to analyze the structure of these polymers. So we use a well-known simulation model here, the Kramer-Guest model, in the next slide, and represent the crossing polymer shown here as a mathematical graph, where we have the cross links as nodes, and if they're the matrix element is non-zero if they're connected by a chain, and also form an entanglement adjacency matrix by applying a primitive path analysis, and then identifying entangled chains via an interaction energy and have a matrix with non-zero elements if the chains are entangled. So then look at some stats of this matrix and the spectra and the degree distribution, and we've compared these to some simple analytical results and see some correlations, all those deviations that we need to look at further, but it looks like a reasonable approach, holds some promise for representing some of the structure of these that might be used in future modeling. So. And I'll be in the back.
Okay, great. And I have a late entry, I guess, from Mitch Luskin, is that right? And I know there were some people that indicated they might just not have do you want to, anyone who is not going to show a poster who wants to just speak while I find Mitch's thing should go next.
I'm right here. So I didn't send Mark slides, so you have to come to my poster to see pretty pictures. So we're interested in things at a somewhat larger scale than the other posters and talks here. We're interested in blood flow, and in particular in the mechanisms by which different kinds of blood cells are distributed in blood vessels. So we have detailed simulations of a model system where we have cells that differ only in stiffness that are otherwise identical. And you can see segregation in that model system. And then we wanted to understand mechanistically what was going on, so we made a toy model, which is basically a stochastic simulation of a very simple model system. And we can show the mechanisms that lead to the segregation of different species in flowing blood.
Thank you. I'm Mitchell Luskin. I don't expect anybody to be able to read that poster. But let me just make a few comments. I'm a mathematician, so I sort of take a mathematical approach. I was here for a few weeks earlier and saw a lot of very interesting things in coarse graining that I'm hoping some of the ideas that I've developed in atomistic continuum modeling and crystals can be applied to. So I guess my philosophy is sort of one of computational complexity, looking at the overall problem, what it is we want to compute, and then try to, of course, minimize degrees of freedom in the kind of lattice systems that I've been interested in. The goals are modeling materials with defects, so we have the kind of things we need to kind of optimize our core size, which of course depends on particular defect, a blending region. We found blending to be the most effective method for either energy-based or force-based methods, and of course coarsening. And now in lattice systems, since we're dealing with a crystal, the coarsening gets larger and larger the farther we go from a defect, and we want to kind of optimize that. I guess it's a little different in these molecular systems. Few comments. I find the kind of information approach that we've heard a few talks on to be quite interesting, somewhat similar to my philosophy. I hope to investigate that. The ADRES method seems also kind of possibly amenable to the techniques I've utilized. Let me just say a few words about the specific results here. Again, in the context of atomistic continuum methods for crystals, the problem for energy-based methods is we don't see any way to develop it one energy that can really kind of capture both atomistic and continuum modeling without significant errors at the interface. And we found that blending can actually reduce those errors to a acceptable tolerance. For force-based methods, the problem there that we found is They're actually unstable. There's an interfacial instability that's always present, and we found that we can actually sort of solve that interface instability problem by a proper blending with a rather precise estimate on the number of atoms. So thank you.
Hi, I'm Tinger from Johns Hopkins. I'm working with Professor Mark Robbins. I perform large-scale simulations, molecular simulations, to understand polymer mechanics. And in particular, I'm interested in entanglements. And that's the topic of my poster. Everyone in polymer physics knows entanglements, which refer to the topological constraints that polymer chains can pass through each other. It's still a puzzling problem. And entanglements can't be detected directly in experiment, but recent advancement in computer tech allow us to follow entanglements on a microscopic level. So I perform simulations on a fracture of polymers on the tension and also on the shear. And then I follow entanglements with some computer algorithms and then correlate the evolution of entanglements with the mechanical processes. Just try to provide some insights into the role of entanglements and the general nature of entanglements as well. Thanks.
Okay, I think that's all the ones I know about. Anybody else want to speak? If not, we can go and enjoy the actual posters themselves. The plan is to leave them up there throughout the meeting, so during any coffee breaks or at any other time, I encourage you to seek people out. Now you know who they are and try to get them to explain their work. Thank you. We'll break for lunch at 1:15.